I'm Roy Futcher.
And I'm Eleanor Futcher.
The overall theme, as you know, has to do with our dreams and myths and our personal growth. This evening, I'm hoping that besides dealing with the dream, we'll get far enough to talk some about myth. And myth is a way of is a universal dream, you might say. It's a collective that has come down through the ages, and they become, well, there are the Greek myths, I'm sure some of you are familiar with, and there are certain myths in the Old Testament, and a myth is a, just like a parable has a truth, it isn't literally so, or, a reported physical fact, but it carries a spiritual truth or wisdom and truth about life. So I hope we will get a chance to talk a little bit about that toward the end. Define what we mean by steward. I think we all probably have a pretty good idea of what a steward is, but who would suggest a definition for being a steward? What is a steward? Who will venture to?
A person who's been entrusted with something or someone else.
Right. Now what's the word? Responsible?
Entrusted.
Okay, that's a good word. Entrusted, I suppose you could say, with property or something or someone else. All right. I think of the word, too, of responsibility. Someone who's given responsibility for that by the owner or the master. And of course, in biblical sense, God gives us our lives, and we are stewards of our lives. And in a sense, we're stewards of our spiritual resources or spiritual life. The parable of the talents is a good illustration, too, of Jesus speaking about being stewards of the gifts that God has given us and using our talents. This evening, we are going to be particularly focusing how we are stewards then of our dream life, or Jesus spoke of the kingdom of God as being within and among us. The dreams reflect what's going on in our personal life. They also reflect or pick up dimensions of our interpersonal life. What might be going on in the family or with our relationship to the world or our relationship to a very significant person. That person may appear in your dream, and they may represent both something of the interpersonal, that is the outer reality, as well as somebody who you know that in your dream may also represent some inner aspect of yourself. But anyway, the dreams do deal with both the outer interpersonal world, as well as our own our relationship to ourselves and our interpersonal world, intrapsychic world. Another thing I'd like to emphasize is that in to take our dreams seriously, and I've said it earlier in my other say, to honor the dream. To honor it as like the Spirit of Christ. Because sometimes God is speaking to us or trying to break through to us through our dreams. Paul spoke of our bodies being the temple of God and our person. This summer, Ellie and I were on a canoe retreat or a canoe journey down the Colorado River for about 6 days. And one of the persons shared something of a song from the Sufis of India, and it expresses very much the same truth as in our own faith. And I was going to, would you like to share the Sufi meditation?
We sang it so many times under these wonderful arches and in these cathedral-like arches. And I'm debating whether I want to be vulnerable and sing it for you or just say it. But you've all been so willing to share and be vulnerable, I'm going to do that too. You step back and you say, this is not my body, this is the temple of God. This is not my heart, this is the altar of love.
And you repeat that a number of
times
over
and over and over that.
With several people in a circle. And it really evokes the sense of affirming how our lives, our bodies are the temple of God and the altar of love. All right. Since we are stewards of our spiritual life, we are going to do something about it this evening and give you an opportunity through an exercise to work with one of your dreams privately. You don't have to share it, but it's, so I've asked you to bring pencils or pens so that you could write down a dream, and then if some of you don't, you could write it down an old dream too. If you don't have something immediate, write down a dream that stuck with you over the years. Maybe you don't particularly understand it. The other thing you can use too, you could if you have a reoccurring daydream, you could write down the daydream. The aspects that are in the daydream. So, yeah.
You can. Anyone else?
Yeah, we have some pencils. Anybody else needing a pen?
So the first thing you want to do is you write a dream, and if you can't remember a dream, think of a daydream, something you've fantasied. And write in the first person present tense. You say, you see this picture, you say, I am sitting by the window. There is. Make it very present. And then if it's a fantasy, you say, if I were a teacher, I would. If I didn't have to work for a living, I'd like to. So this is your opportunity to just be creative. And do that. You got an idea? Have you got your ideas?
Any questions?
Question.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, this is my first time in a dream.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about a dream that you actually had when you're sleeping, or are you talking about a dream that
mm-hmm.
is sort of a goal?
No, a dream that you had when you're sleeping that you maybe wonder about, particularly if it's a repeat dream. Even fragments of the dream. Yeah, whatever comes.
And a daydream would be something that comes more involuntarily rather than, although you can fantasy about something you'd like to do with your life as far as that goes. But sometimes you may be washing dishes or walking or going here and driving somewhere and a daydream comes in, and you have some little movie going on in your head, and maybe it repeats, and it's always somewhat a reoccurring theme. So write, if you don't have a night dream, write down a daydream. So that's the first step, and then she'll give you a second step.
And Now, some of you are going to be more detailed, and others of you are going to write a few fragments. And just go at your own pace. But those of you that have written down something, now list the parts or the persons or the objects and the things that appear in this dream. List the persons.
Place, maybe.
Place, animals, objects, things that appear. And after you do that, you jot down any associations. Suppose you have the house, your house in the dream. What is your association to your house? Suppose you have a pet in your dream. What is your association? Or something you don't recognize. Now, what's particularly important in dreams is to pay attention to that object or person that you don't recognize. There's a man in my dream, and I don't know who it is, but he is standing behind a table, and there is a crutch laying on the table, like that. The person or place that mystifies you, that's the part and the thing that you want to pay a special attention to. The part that doesn't make sense. The part that says, oh, that was a dumb dream. It doesn't make any sense and doesn't mean a thing. Now, I know this is not giving you a lot of time, but some of you may already be looking at this and say, I wonder if this means this. If you do know or have some idea what the message is, jot down what you think the message of that particular dream or fantasy is for you. If there is a strange person or object in your dream, jot down a sentence or two about what that strange person or thing is. Who that is. It's a man I've never seen. What does that mean to me, a man I've never seen? Do I have some fantasies about something that's missing in my life, some way of relating to the world, some masculine trait like that? Okay, does anyone have any question or anything you'd like to share? Were you able to do that? Do some of that? Okay. How about you?
Yeah, the only problem that I have is in my dream, everything else is familiar, but I have a bear with steel jaws.
A bear with the steel jaws. And that's a real dream.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And to me, the steel jaws, I don't
know. Okay. What is that? What is the reaction to you? You sound like you reject that as making sense.
Well, yeah, a little bit, because basically in the dream I ripped the steel jaws out. And I felt sorry for the creature afterwards. But yeah, it's still, to me, it's like, I don't know.
So a way to proceed with that is, as you keep saying, I don't know, the way to become acquainted with what that is saying to you is to become that bear and talk from the first place of the bear. Just be the bear and write down a couple sentences. Would you be willing to do that just now?
Yeah.
Okay. Write down three sentences and then we'll come back to you. Anyone else? What would you like to share?
My dream, outside of what we have discussed before, my other one is like, I am flying, but I don't get anywhere. Mm-hmm. That seems to be associated with birds and water.
Mm-hmm. Notice the second sentence, what you said, the second sentence. But what?
But I don't get anywhere.
What does that mean to you in conscious life, not getting anywhere?
Maybe I feel like I'm not going ahead with my life like I would like to.
Do you? Sometimes dreams are statements of just the way things are. They're quite clear. So what would you think the message of that is? I'm flying and I'm not getting anywhere. What's the message?
First thing that comes to mind is that I would like to retire from work. Mm-hmm. But I don't know where to go or what to do after, because mm-hmm. I know I have to find some sort of a job, because my job that I am at is quite strenuous on me.
Mm-hmm. So, is there some sense that you have a decision to make and you aren't making it, so you're not getting anywhere?
Something else, maybe that is. The flying.
Mm-hmm.
Like I want to let loose, like I want to get going, but. Mm-hmm.
Do you? You know, and no one needs to share any more than you feel comfortable sharing.
No,
but
I haven't.
Kind of.
I keep trying to think. I want to get involved with schooling, but maybe I'm afraid. I guess maybe I'm afraid.
There's a part of you that is flying. Another part of you is grounded and stuck.
And stuck.
Is that possible?
Yes, that could be. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is like I'm not going to go anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I want to get my wings out and go and do.
Mm-hmm. What you're saying is, as long as you're in this job, which is too hard for you, you aren't getting anywhere.
Yes, I'm not getting anywhere.
You're really not flying.
Yes. My wings are in the body.
Where what's the place in which you're flying? Do you recognize where you are? The place?
Well, it's just like water.
You're over water?
Just like I'm over water or hills.
Mm-hmm. Water and hills. So a lot of times, the place in your dreams makes some sense. You know, water is suggestive of emotion or some of the stuff that's underneath, maybe. Beyond, but you're saying hills also.
Mm-hmm.
And well, now, see, I don't know if you listed those, but list the water, list
the
place.
Water, birds.
Okay, birds. And then write your associations. Now, you know, are there particular hills? Do you have certain associations to hills? Do you live among the hills? Do you?
No, I live by the water.
And you live by the water.
I live by a river.
So, is there what feeling is in the dream?
When I'm flying, I'm very elated.
And elated.
Yeah, I'm very elated. And then this is all of a sudden like.
But still, you feel like you're not getting anywhere.
Yeah, it's like I'm a bird flying up against the window. You're not.
Mm-hmm.
It's there. You know, you can't go anyplace.
And that is a statement of where you are in your conscious life now.
So,
yeah.
From what you said.
Okay.
You have some aches right now, and
mm-hmm.
and you'd like to retire. It's too hard.
Is there any persons in the dream?
No.
Any animals?
No.
You are essentially kind of alone. I mean,
I'm more or less alone. It's like I'm a bird, I can fly. I'm off. I literally take off, you know? Take off.
Okay.
Sometimes that's that could be a balancing dream too, couldn't it? Do you notice, do you have those dreams after a particularly busy day or heavy day, you know, there may be.
I guess I have a dream.
Pay attention to that too.
Do you wake up in the morning from the dream? You know, I mean, just a dream in that last part of the morning, so that you sort of wake up from this particular dream.
Yes, I think.
Well, just in terms of general principles, too, flying, you know, initially you're saying you feel elated and you feel free. Mm-hmm. And so that's giving you a rather kind of positive feeling. And we were walking down together from the table, and she was telling about the cold weather shift as bothering her arthritis and her bursitis, and that she would not, you wouldn't hike up to Lake Holden Lake because of those of the pain. So the dream may be related to that in one sense, if you're a bird and you can fly, you're free of the limitations of your physical infirmity that's bothering you right now. And yet it also says you're struggling with frustration too, because you feel like you're not getting anywhere. I mean, you see, like, both feelings are there. Initially is a feeling of being free, which sort of is, well, a dream gives you some compensation for maybe some frustration during the day, but you're still up against some of resolving maybe some of the things that are frustrating you, which may be some of the arthritis. Let's sort of leave it there and see what others.
Yeah, I wanted to hear what you did. Would you like to tell us what you did with the bear dialogue? Are you willing to read that to us?
I didn't do the dialogue, but I just thought. If I was a bear, I would.
You are the bear.
I'm the bear. It would be. Jaws are a sense of control or power.
It would what?
The jaws are a sense of control or power.
So my jaws are
a sense of control or power, mm-hmm. and it would render me powerless if they were yanked out. Also experiencing pain. I experience pain as well, much like that.
The bear is in touch with the pain, don't you think? Or he causes pain?
Mm-hmm. Well, you had your jaws pulled. If I had my jaws pulled out, I'd be in pain.
So what do you think that's saying about you?
Well, I'm a controlling. I like to be in control, mm-hmm. so I can see. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The only thing I don't totally understand is that I'm the one that pulled the jaws from the bear.
Mm-hmm. Jaws?
Are you sometimes, does it sometimes work against you to be controlling?
Oh, all the time.
Okay. Okay. So part of you is trying to rip that part of you out. Do you understand how that might, you internalize all the parts of it, it's all you. There's no bear out there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it could.
You know, the animal might, in a sense, represent your body. And if I heard you correctly, you said you pull the jaw, bear jaw out.
Yeah. Steel jaws.
Steel jaws.
There were steel jaws.
Steel jaws.
In the bear.
Do you ever grind your teeth at night?
Yeah, I would do that too.
Control has to do with controlling emotions and maybe feel the need to control in relationships, which has to do with feeling. And the jaw is a reservoir for anger or aggression, you know, or those steel jaws, you know.
It's pretty simple.
The body can carry some of the tension that we have about situations. In a way, somehow, you may be trying to correct the situation, by the fact that you're pulling the steel jaw down. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's what she's doing. Uh-huh. That you, well, at least it's come to your awareness.
Yeah. The other thing, too.
In another level, besides the conscious level, it's, you confront it in your sleeping time, too.
The, an animal represents a more unconscious side. It can represent the body and how we're dealing with it, but it also is a less conscious form of life than, you know, human life. So, yeah, the bear has the steel jaws, so that could have been, has been, say, an unconscious or kind of side, and you are coming and confronting it in some way in the stream. And, you know,
okay, do, before we move on, do we want, does one other person want to share a dream or a fantasy? Do I see anyone else any kind of ready to talk about what they wrote down? No? Okay.
Are there any more questions? I'm going to draw another diagram.
Any more questions?
Someone else willing to share what they came up with?
Okay.
This is a recurring dream.
Oh, that was the best kind.
And I have several forms of it, but I just wrote one down. Mm-hmm. And in my dream, I'm sleeping, and I hear a noise, and I get scared, and I think that someone is in my room or trying to get in the room or is looking in the room, and I ask who is there, and then somebody says something like, we loaned you something and we're here to get it, and I have no idea what they're talking about. They think I have something that belongs to them, and I don't remember what the item is, and I don't know who these people are. And so usually I tell them something like, oh, I'll get it and give it to you tomorrow, or or sometimes I don't say anything and they just go away. Mm-hmm. And then I wake up. In real life, I wake up, and it's usually the middle of the night, and then I'm scared and I have to turn the lights on and go and look around and make sure no one's there, because it's so realistic.
And so the feeling is one around scare. I mean, the dream does communicate something of scare.
Yeah, I'm afraid.
Mm-hmm. Have you been able to work with the dialogue much? It would be important for you to, in carrying it forward, that's what we call active imagination. If you carry it forward and for you to talk to those strange people that are in the room and say, don't go away, I want to talk to you, who are you? Uh-huh. And then let them answer. Uh-huh.
And then actually have the people that are saying, I want something from you, require them to tell you. And even though you think you're guessing, when you become that person, go with it. Uh-huh. Suppose you did that now and say, what is your name?
Netter.
Netter?
Netter, yeah.
Okay. Suppose you would say, Netter, what I'm wanting from you is, what would it be?
And say that as the people I don't know?
We are wanting what? What would it be? What comes?
All that comes to me is to deal with something.
What?
There's some issue.
Okay, well, they know. What's the, you're being they. If you made a guess, what would it be? What are you supposed to deal with? And you don't have to say, but you know. There's a part of you that knows if you will take a good look. And it's pretty scary sometimes. Isn't that true? Mm-hmm. Do you want to just tell us one thing that they want of Nader?
Well, I won't tell you what the issue is,
right,
but I think there's something from my childhood.
Oh, for sure.
That
could be.
That just that I'm supposed to look at.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, I think that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, sometimes they have, and you know, maybe it's, I'm supposed to look at something. And I feel like it's something of my childhood.
But you, and you have some ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I do.
Yeah. Uh-huh, uh-huh. So if you just bring an openness to that, and then just let it be. But if the dream keeps repeating, it's a message to you that you aren't doing as much as you might toward getting that out of the way. Hmm. Because next week we're going to talk about stages of life, and people get stuck in stages. And unless you go back into that stage that's incomplete, that something hasn't been completed, you can never really move successfully into the next stages. And when the opportunity is presented to do that, then one is invited to bring all the energy, however you choose to do that. Dialogue, prayer, talking with someone, therapy, writing out a dream and dialoguing and getting in touch with what's being asked. And because there's a lot more inner wisdom in you than you realize. You know more than you know. You know.
I'd like to add a little now to it too. Comment on the dreaming in which you're sleeping within the dream. See, she's sleeping in the bed in her room, but she's also awake and there in the room observing. Well, in a way that's kind of related to a myth of the Sleeping Beauty. You're familiar with, you know, and someone has to awaken her to life, or bring her to consciousness, and there's sort of a mystery involved with what will kind of, yeah, awaken her. And that, of course, in that story, the prince comes and awakens her. but that's not an uncommon theme or a dream in which you are sleeping. So it's sort of saying that part of you is sleeping and part of you is awake and observing and is aware. I think it's important to, if you know who the strange people are they men or women? Are they a mixture? You know, are they some of each, or do you know off, do you?
I think it's usually men.
Usually men.
Yeah. I think there has been a woman, but I think it's usually men.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm asking this because, and this will help to illustrate some of our whatever diagram. When, say, if you as a woman, the woman, the shadow side would be other women. This is in terms of Jung's kind of structuring the psyche, that there's the ego, the persona, that is the public aspects of our personality, and that we're pretty much familiar. So this is sort of the conscious area, the ego as well as the persona. Then we have our own personal unconscious, which includes our family, our mother, our own personal mother and father, our siblings, the home, the houses that we've lived in, the communities that we lived in. That's all part of your personal unconscious, the country that we live in, and so on. Then there's the universal level, the collective level, which have the archetypal symbols of the water, the ocean, some of the animals, the horse. A house is pretty much a collective symbol in some ways too, because it's very common to all humankind. So that has to be collective. Well, now in your dream, there may be at times be a woman in the dream who may be can be seen in the sense as a helper. Now, the opposite side, the masculine side, would generally tend to be from the collective. And Jung spoke of for men and women, there is the anima and the animus. That's it, all right. For the woman, it's the animus. And for the man, the anima. So for the man, it's a feminine aspect in his unconscious. And for you, it would be a masculine aspect, or for the women here. And so the masculine side is the inferior side, and that's not meant...
less developed.
Yeah, it's not meant derogatory. The feminine is the inferior side, or the less developed side for me as a male, and the masculine would be the secondary side for you as a woman. And so in your dream, you have these so-called strangers coming, and they are scaring, you're getting scared too by them being there and being, you know, feeling uneasy about it. So I think it'd be important. This is part of you, you know. You could write, and when you one way you can do is rewrite the dream that you've already written down, and put a personal pronoun in front of some of these people, like, these are my strangers who come into this room, so that you begin to own them, and then take some time to. Certainly, like you, my bear, you know, it's her bear. And to identify with that aspect and have them come, you know, they come into the room, and maybe in your dream they could come over and wake you up. And have both of you awake. And maybe, you know, what does he want to say to you? And even, you know, if there's something scary or something, you know, let it get out, and you can talk. You have this side of you that seems to be ready to do it. It's there that's observing, and it's you that gets in the morning when you wake up that are in touch with all that scare feeling. So that's okay. Let's. Any questions or anyone else wanting to deal with something that. Then we'll go on with these diagrams that I thought would be helpful to get us a broader understanding here. These are two diagrams of both of the same thing. The first one, as I've already told you now, and what these levels are, and I might mention more on the universal level, there's the Great Mother, and so the Mother is it's the Great Mother, whereas at the personal level it would be your own particular mother. And there's an archetype of the old man is kind of a wise person, not just spirit, but old him, and then, you know, there'd be the father, it'd be the personal level. God, particularly as we view him as masculine, would be God the Father. We have Jesus addressing his God as Father in the Lord's Prayer. We have God the Father. So these aspects in our psyche would carry the masculine. In the creation story, we are told that we are created in the image of God, that there's but what I'm trying to relate here is that to be the great mother, maybe when we speak of God as God the mother, the great mother is certainly the archetype, the God archetype in the psyche as well as God the father. But I think these aspects are the related to the image of God, that there is a center within us that is the spiritual center, a core. Jung gave it the name of the self. And usually that's always capitalized, right? Because it represents the spiritual core, or like the Christ image, and we speak of, you know, the Christ in us that can, that we'd like to give expression to be in discipline or related to. Now, the ego is, as we were saying, is the steward. Or another good word is, the ego is servant. He's the servant to the self, is a steward to the deep self, which is within the unconscious, or really the deep level of the psyche. This has been expressed in many ways, like the kingdom of God is within. There was the fox, the not the brethren, but the he spoke of the inner life, who is he was a friend, you know, the friends from Pennsylvania, the
fox.
Trying to think of the name of the church, but Matthew. No, not
Quakers.
The Quakers. They have a teaching about the inner life and taking time to meditate and to pray. And their worship service often is a quiet time, and then people out of the meditation, as they get in touch with something that's come up in inner for them, they speak and share that, and that constitutes a lot of their worship. So it is like they're honoring the deep self. Now, as an ego, as an I don't own that inner. There's no way I can possess it. But I can be related to it, and I can pay attention and give time or worship or meditation are all ways in which, as stewards of our of the temple of our life, that we honor our relationship to the deep knowings within us. And Jung called it the self. Now, any questions around that before I move on? I'll talk about the dark side. Okay. Maybe before I leave this, that when we are born and come into this life, or even when we're in the womb and developing as a fetus, and then finally a little child in there, and then at our birth, we do not have a sense of ourselves as being separate from the mother. And even after birth, it takes a number of months before the infant realizes fully that it is a separate entity. And what I'm wanting to indicate is that for the small infant, the self, this mystery of love, of the light, and the ego are really the ego is not emerged yet. And as it develops, this axis between the self and the ego develops. That as the consciousness of the little infant develops, it realizes it's a separate person. It And I think, to me, archetypally, this is what is related to sin. I don't want you... we speak about being separated from God or alienated from God. That is, we're separate. And the very fact that we're human, we can realize that we're separate individuals and we have free choice. And so there's a potential for sin, and that's not necessarily always negative. It's the fact of our being. None of the other lower animals have that kind of consciousness. So, and what happens as that little child grows, he or she develops a little willpower and independence. And it has needs, and when they're not met, it may get more demanding, or if it's in pain or hurting, or it, you know, it can even bite the breast, and it hurts, and maybe they get aggressive, and the mother pushes it away, and the child feels it. They've been pushed away, and hey, realize or her that I'm a separate entity. I can't have this mama, this breast all the time. Or later, even in when the child gets in the 2 or 3 years old, we talk about the awful, what, threes or something?
The terrible twos.
The terrible twos. They have a will of their own. They've discovered that they can be independent, see? And various things happen in here that sometimes sort of injures this, but that's part of the growth process. Better not. But anyway, that as the child and infant grows, child grows, it always, in some way, needs to realize it's anchored in itself. It has to develop its skills, its autonomy, its sense of adequacy. Play games, understand rules, and get along in society. And their self-esteem is affected in this whole process. So, where there is a lot of trauma, there can be injury to the child in terms of it having a solid connection or a consistent connection, let's say, with its inner self. Then when we all get some of these wounds and injuries, and then we get into an adult stage of our life, we sometimes have to work through those injuries, some of the emotions that pile up from that, some of the hurts, because we were too young to really realize it and understand it. So, and a religious experience, I think, is a healing kind of, a conversion sometimes, where a person then gets maybe a sense of forgiveness for the lot of the load that's on them, the guilt, you know, the amazing grace that comes in and heals. And that is a real reconnecting or a healing of any injuries in the connection between the ego and the inner self. I intended this to be like a sphere with this ego conscious side at the top, and that this is sort of set in as a deep center of the self. See, what did I say I was going to go to next?
The dark side.
Huh?
The dark side.
Oh, the dark side. Thank you.
So, may I say something at
sure.
that?
Yeah.
Okay, we're talking about dreams as if they're all very positive and, or they're always useful and good. I mean, someone got the impression that that's what we were saying and said, are there evil dreams? Because he said, I have evil dreams. And I don't think those are, I should pay attention to those. And that's, I think, what Roy is going to speak to when he talks about the dark side. What we label evil.
And it's very easy for the ego to judge things that are in the dark side, shadow side, as being totally bad or repugnant or negative. But
and therefore should be
and they're
pushed away.
Pushed away
and ignored.
Viewed as evil. But I wouldn't say, you know, God accepts us totally just as we are. And we know that in our creation, of the creation, he says all is good, very good. So, but there is, what does happen, as we develop and learn to live in this world, I haven't mentioned much about the persona, but the persona are those, well, that's our identity as a person, our, whether we're male or female, the roles that we take on, the education that we have, our bodies is part of the ego and sort of part of the persona. Oh, the clothing in dreams. Sometimes it'll be something about your shoes. Maybe you're walking around and you don't have any shoes on. Or clothing. Clothing are aspects of your persona, of how you present yourself or protect yourself, because clothing protects us. And if I didn't have any shoes on, some said my feet are exposed. And it might depend on the story of the dream, but generally something is bringing something to my attention about being grounded or not being careful where I walk, or how I walk, or something related. It might depend on the action of the dream. So the persona then, anyway, are conscious aspects of ourself, and if we get on then to be a teacher, or one of them goes on to an electrician, or mechanic, or professor, or so forth. Those are all parts of the persona. Then at the collective level, I guess why I'm mentioning persona, because in the persona we decide what's good and what's bad. I mean, that's all conscious things. Like sometimes we may think that anger is always bad. You shouldn't, and sometimes some of us have been trained to say, you know, a mother might say or a father might say, don't you sass back, or you know, anger is, you shouldn't talk that way. On if they really push anger away and don't find a way to help a person deal with the anger, because anger is related to hurt or pain of some sort. We get angry for a reason, because usually something is bothering or hurting us. So, but anger could be pushed into the dark side as a negative and something that shouldn't, you know, and therefore gets repressed. Oh, there's a lot of things. You shouldn't be jealous. You should always be loving. See, that would be up here. Always loving, patient. And it's all good values, kind. See, but what, and that would be part of the persona, but what room does it make for when there's conflict? You shouldn't be aggressive. And maybe women have had that kind of a message, maybe more than men. It's more permissible for a man to be aggressive and to fight in some situation, but for a woman, you should be ladylike. I think in the younger generation, they're allowing women are more for being assertive and owning their own strengths and powers and abilities. But, okay, when these things get repressed and pushed down, then in the dream, you might have a Hitler in the dream. Or you might have a Nero from, you know, the Roman emperor. some monster, a physical monster, or there might be violence going on in the dream, or you may be running away. That's all often part of the shadow. That as a young man, he had a phobia about light. He couldn't stand light. He couldn't stand the sunshine. Too strong a light, so he always wore a cap with a visor over his head. And that came, well, anyway, got started. He was one of five brothers. He was in the middle. The first son was very aggressive and fought with the mother. And the second one was more manipulative too. But anyway, he saw these actions go on. His way of handling it was to play at low profile, you know, fade into the background, don't fight, go to your room, because he didn't like what he saw happen between his oldest brother and his mother, and may I suppose the father to some extent. This family eventually ended up in a divorce, and that's about when this young man was about 14, so it was in his teens that the phobia started. And what in his dreams, when he started therapy, he was being chased by men. He was being chased by, like maybe a cowboys or gangsters, and there were guns and so on. And he'd be running over hills and various up the mountain and into the woods, and they'd be, you know, going after him. Eventually, what he had to do was to face these parts of himself. See, he was running away. He was running away from his aggression and his anger. He wasn't taking care of himself in this family. And as a little boy, he had a lot of scare around bedtime, I remember now. And I'll bring something about the lights, of course, leaving the lights on. Oh, and he would get into compulsive washing in the bathroom and, before going to bed. So his anxiety, he had a lot of anxiety. And he handled it through compulsive activities and had a lot of scare as a little boy. So in his adult life, he was kind of flat in his affect and not aggressive, really quite a passive man. And it was showing right in the shadow and in the violence that was in his dreams. Any questions around that?
Time to
get toward the end. Yeah. Well, see what I'll do. But the shadow is an important side for us. Because it's usually the parts that get rejected and ignored and avoided. So where you have people of the same sex, it's important to deal with that and to make friends with the adversary, find out what they have to say. And the thing is, they are often mad at you for a reason. They want you to do something different. See? And they have something to contribute. See, these fellows that were chasing him, they have all the aggression. Okay? It was sort of like, say, that they caught him, you know, and they'd say, "Hey, you, stop being this wimp. You know, take care of us and yourself."